Welcome to the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of The Fade Route with D and Z. I am Z, and we got a big show for you. We're talking Mets injuries. We're talking Carl Nassib's big announcement. And we are talking a lot of basketball. How much is a lot? The entire first block. We're talking that much basketball. And we're starting with basketball, too. We have some breaking news as the Boston Celtics have made a decision on who is going to replace Brad Stevens. Ironically, Brad Stevens is the one who's finalizing the deal with the coach. It is Ime Udoka, who is an assistant coach most recently with the Brooklyn Nets. And in the past, he's also been a part of the U.S. national team coaching roster. And that was the leg up for him because he already has established relationships with Jaylen Brown, with Jason Tatum, with the key cogs of the Boston Celtics. So one of the first dominoes to fall in the NBA hot stove, which is going to get started very, very soon as we have the combine coming up and then we have the draft. And the draft lottery was actually last night, and that was won by the Detroit Pistons. So congratulations to the Pistons. They earned the right to draft probably Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State, but you never know. You never want to speculate as to who you're going to take, especially in a relatively deep draft like this. You have Suggs from Gonzaga. There's always some Euro floating around. You know, for every Luka Doncic, there's a Frederick Weiss. So who knows? I'm not going to speculate yet as to who it's going to be for the Pistons, but it's most likely going to be Cade Cunningham based on what we've seen this past year. Followed by the Rockets, Cavs, and Raptors to round out the top four. A lot of big teams with some significant picks to round out the rest of the top 10. You're looking at Orlando, Oklahoma City, who has a ton of draft capital going into the next few years. Sam Presti has done an amazing job there. Golden State, their first of two to round out the lottery. So they actually get Minnesota selection from there. Another Orlando pick through Chicago, Sacramento, and New Orleans. So this is going to be a very big NBA draft just for the simple fact that you have multiple teams with multiple picks and you can go a couple different ways, you know? It's either draft and draft and draft and get as much talent, accumulate as much talent as possible, or wheeling and dealing. I love to see the wheeling and dealing aspect of it, especially for a team like, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder. You package a couple of those picks together, you can get a monster player. And we'll talk more about that very shortly. But congrats again to the Detroit Pistons. You guys have earned it for being bad for so long. And here he is. I've known this guy since our days on Carousel Shoes, flight crew through and through, the last QB in St. John's history. What's up, D? How's it going, man?
Hey, great to be here. NBA draft is always an interesting one. You never really know how the chips are going to fall. There's always a lot of speculation out there. And it's hard to get better through the draft with the NBA. But just because there are so few college players that actually turn out to be NBA players. Mm-hmm. And the Pistons haven't been good for a while. Cunningham seems like the obvious choice there. I don't know if he's a franchise changer. He's not a Ball. He's not a Williamson. He's not a Ben Simmons.
Well, nobody is.
But, you know, they definitely have something to look forward to. Last show we talked about Orlando possibly getting in the mix there. They don't get the top pick. But there's talent in this draft, so the top five teams or the top five picks should be able to get better.
How do you think Houston feels about this? They stripped this down to the bare bones. They brought in Steven Silas. They got rid of Westbrook. They got rid of Harden, and they only get the number two out of it. You think they're feeling a certain kind of way?
No, I think they understand that this is going to be a couple. It's going to be a project. This wasn't going to be something that was going to be solved overnight by one player. This is something that's going to be built on in time. I would imagine probably the next 2 to 3 years, they're going to have a top five pick, especially being in the West. So I think this is all part of the plan for management, that it's going to take some time to develop the team, to attract free agents, and to compete at a high level again. I mean, you got to remember, for the last 5 years, I mean, they were competing for a title.
Yeah.
You know, in the NBA, you don't always get that big of a window. Especially when you don't have like a LeBron James on your team. I mean, yeah, they had James Harden, but not everybody knew what James Harden was when he got there. So they know it's a project. I think the Pistons also know that they have to work it out for them. Most of those teams picking in the top five, top four, it's gonna take some time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that was just a lot of, I mean, with the exception of the Raptors, just some of the worst. But transitioning to the Udoka hire, I mean, he was one of the finalists along with Chauncey Billups and Darvin Ham. So, and blast from the past, and name we haven't heard in forever. So, what do you think of the Udoka hire? And do you think that this is going to be, you know, what the cure for what ails the Boston Celtics?
I just don't know. I don't really know much about his scheme and what he's going to coach there. I was a big Brad Stevens guy, and I thought he was a really good coach. But you noticed the last 2 years, especially this year, that the players were just not playing at a high level. And that was really affecting his coaching. And we're going to talk about Kemba Walker later, but he was one of the main contributors to that. You have Jason Tatum, who's a star. You have Jalen Brown, who is a great competitor. So they're going to need to add another star. And they're going to have to change their identity, because what they were the last 4 years is not gonna work the next 4 years. What Jason Tatum is he needs to decide, like, am I gonna be the guy who's gonna drop 30, 40 points a night, or am I gonna be the guy that drops 30 points a night and is a main facilitator to other people on the team? And we've talked about this off the air, and we've talked about this in production readings. Terry Rozier was a big part of that team. And even the point guard position is very important to the Boston Celtics.
No, 100%, especially if you're not going to have somebody like a Kemba Walker. You're not going to have a distributor. And I don't think Tatum. I mean, Tatum's more an ISO and drive kind of guy. He's not gonna be a facilitator in terms of like creating opportunities for other people. And you can see just from the way he put the team on his back, a lot of it was necessity, but a lot of that, you know, is his game as is anyway. Just, you know, he's gonna go for 46. He's gonna go for 48. So, I mean, you wonder if this does change the identity of his team. We're going to see what they do, if point guard is going to be more something they go through free agency to address, or maybe something, I don't, you know, stranger things have happened drafting a rookie point guard and trying to, you know, trying to learn on the job kind of thing. So we'll see what Udoka is going to do. I know he did coach under Pop, so I think he's definitely going to be prepared for the job. So while he may be a rookie in terms of being a head coach, I think he's been learning under the right people. I mean, he's been learning under Pop. He shared assistant coaching duties this year with Mike D'Antoni. So he's been rubbing elbows with some pretty influential and pretty good coaches. So we'll see if anything rubbed off on him and kind of created something that the Celtics can play off of.
Yeah, so like Kyrie Irving was, you know, a big part of that Boston team. He played the point guard position the way it needed to be played. They brought in Kemba Walker, expecting that same high level of play, and I don't think they ever really got it.
It's time for the Fade In, where we give a nod to the trending sports stories of the week.
And then you look at a team like the Suns, who have flourished with Chris Paul at point guard. They went from a team that didn't make the playoffs to now two games away from going to the NBA Finals. They take a 2-0 series lead against the Clippers without Chris Paul. So can these young guns, Booker, Ayton, Bridges, is it their time? Have they arrived?
It's hard to argue against it, the way that they've played. Granted, I mean, it was a one-point victory last night. It was 104-103, a game-winning alley-oop to DeAndre Ayton. But when you have contributions from Ayton, from Booker, from Cameron Payne, you had Dario Saric showed up. You have contributions throughout. It's hard to beat. And with the Clippers, they are playing shorthanded, and significantly, since Kawhi Leonard is not on the team, he's not on the team right now. And, you know, who knows if he's going to have that Willis Reed moment. I mean, I don't know. I don't know his body. I don't know what's going on. This has been an issue with Kawhi Leonard all the way back to San Antonio in terms of load management and stress on the body. So we'll see if he's able to make any kind of effort into getting back into this, because he is a defensive stalwart. He's a great defensive player in addition to being an all-around, you know, a great scorer. So you lose it's a double whammy for the Clippers. They have to rely on Paul George. They have to rely on guys like Pat Bev. They got to rely on playoff Rondo. You got to rely on, you know, Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson is stepping up. So I don't know if that is enough for the Clippers to hang in this series if Booker and Ayton, specifically Booker, who dropped 40 in game one. I don't know if that's enough for the Clippers to hang in this series. So the Suns, I'm hesitant to say that this is going to propel them all the way to a championship, but they are looking really good right now. And it's good that Chris Paul is out now, which means he's healthy for the finals if they make it that far.
Yeah, I'm not going to jump the gun on this. I think it's nice that they're up 2-0, but these games are also played in Phoenix. They're playing the Clippers without the Clippers' best player. I'm not so quick to anoint these young guns as being arrived. I'm impressed by their 9 straight wins, but let's see how they do on the road. Let's see what happens when Kawhi comes back. You know, they still got 6 more games. They got 6 more games to win before they become a champion.
Agreed. And, you know, role players like your Jay Crowders, like your Cameron Paynes, they show up at home. The real test is when they go on the road, and we'll see what they're made out of. But you got to like what you've seen so far. You know, plus minuses are strong. They're scoring, both Ayton and Booker. Ayton slipped a little bit. He was -7 in game one, but definitely rebounded well in game two. So, you know, it remains to be seen what the rest of this team is going to produce. But in terms of the Clippers, it's got to be that they need more. They just need more. I know Zubac had a pretty good game in game
Botch two. That last play, though, man. Keep him away from the basket. What are you doing? Put your hand up.
Yeah, I mean,
one tell him a story, spin his ear, keep him away from the basket.
But, you know, it's one play among many. It's the most important play of the game, but at the same point, he is the only one who took a significant step up. You have Kennard who contributed with 10. Everybody else is hovering in single digits, man. They need more, and I don't know if their roster is capable of more.
Yeah.
Than Kawhi Leonard.
Right, right. But, I mean, I'm really more excited about this Bucks-Hawks series. I'm really rooting for the Hawks because to me they seem like the better team, the more complete team. They competed hard with the Knicks. They took the 76ers to 7 games. They can shoot, they have height, they have depth, they're young, and they have a superstar. I mean, they have ascended so quickly from a team that seemed like they were dead in water during the season. Now all of a sudden they're like, wow, we could actually get to the NBA Finals this year. And, you know, there's no Lakers on the other side, and Kawhi's hurt, and Phoenix is young. I mean, we have a chance here. And with the Bucks is just lousy coaching. No real set plays. Lots of ISO ball with Giannis. Giannis can't shoot. He can't hit free throws. He's scared to guard the best player in the opposing team. We're going to find out the best part about this series. We're going to find out if Bogdanovich chose the right team. Yeah. So that's exciting. He's playing out of his mind. He's shooting so well. You could tell he wants to win. So that series I'm looking more forward to because I want to see the Hawks take it to the Bucks.
Even before it was the Bogdanovich series, it was the Coach Budenholzer series because he used to coach the Hawks before he went to the – this is big time. So this is the old team versus – who was wrong. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting to see because if you look at that game set, everybody – right, and granted, they did take the Nets take them to overtime, and then the Bucks were able to pull away. But everybody was able to show up for that game 7, and that is something that hasn't happened routinely. So either Giannis had a great game, and Middleton was Middleton was pretty good, and Giannis was kind of falling off, and Brooke looked something. Drew Holiday was in the witness protection program for some of this, so I'm very interested. Can do against a better team, so to speak, because you have Collins and Capella, you have bigs, that can rebound and play defense. You have Herter, he can shoot. Gallinari, he can shoot. Bogdanovich, he can shoot. And Trae Young is your facilitator. And I'll be interested to see if Trae Young gets the superstar calls, because you know how he likes to kind of maneuver his body, and they're changing the rules next year to kind of work away from what Trae Young has been able to do this year. Just kind of throw your body into it and hope you'll get a foul call. So I'm very interested. This is definitely going to be a well-contested series. It's not going to be a sweep in either direction. It's not going to be a gentleman's sweep either. I can definitely see this going for the long haul, and the Hawks have a legitimate shot here. Absolutely they do.
Yeah, I agree. That's why, to me, this is the more compelling series, especially, you know, they're not dealing with injuries and they're not dealing with COVID the way the other series is.
Yeah.
And I think the best part about this series is we know the best team is going to come out on top.
So true.
And that's why I'm excited, because I think the Bucks are a shit team, and I want to see them I want to see them get eliminated.
Oh, there we go. There's a drop right there, guys. There's a drop right there if we're able to make that happen. But transitioning from the victors to the losers of the previous series, who was more of a disappointment, in your opinion, the Nets or the Sixers?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I was so excited to talk about this because, man, you want to talk about two trash teams. Both are huge disappointments. Let's first talk about the Brooklyn Nets. They should be embarrassed with themselves. They're trying to be New York's team. Now, man, you're going to have to do more than that. You got Steve Nash as the coach, Blake Griffin as a player, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. And you can't get out of the second round. And worse than that, you got beat by the Bucks at home in game seven. DeAndre Jordan doesn't play. Joe Harris not only can't hit shots, but he can't even catch simple passes. Like, what is happening? No real plays, mostly ISO ball. Play calls for the Nets at the end of regulation was for Kevin Durant to take a shot off the left-hand side. He tried to take a three to end the game, hits it, his foot was on the line, it's a two. Oh, at the end of the first overtime, yeah, let's run the same play at the top of the key. This time, he takes a turnaround shot, barely takes a look at the basket, and of course he misses it. They got what they deserved. Great play call, Steve Nash. Glad you drove that one up. You got all these people on your coaching staff, like D'Antoni, and this is what you come up with? But this is what happens when you just put a guy in there. Like, you needed a coach. You need a lieutenant. Awful. Now for the 76ers. Ben Simmons, get out of here. My man's wearing a shooting sleeve and he doesn't even take any shots. Can't shoot free throws. Immediately gives up the ball as soon as he gets the rebound, dribbles up court, either gives the ball up before reaching half court or gives the ball up as soon as he gets the other side of half court. The hell are you doing? 5 points in a game seven at home? And you're a max player, former all number one pick, former overall number one pick, 36 minutes of play. If I put you in for 36 minutes, I'm pretty sure you'd score more than 5 points. And Doc Rivers, can you only win championships when you have three Hall of Famers on your team? Maybe you should go sign your son again. Then you can have an excuse. Jeez. Having said all that, I think Brooklyn's the more disappointing team. What an embarrassment. Glad these two teams are out. Trash. Straight trash.
In terms of expectations, Brooklyn had more expectations. I agree. I got to say, though, Harden showed up. Durant showed up. The guys who were supposed to show up showed up. You said all that needed to be said about Ben Simmons. I can't heap any more on top of that. Right. 2 of 4. But yeah, 50%. Very efficient. Very efficient. I mean, that's all I can say. Very efficient. Now, clearly, Ben Simmons is listening to the show. He's listening to the show. Because what did we say last week? If you're only going to take four shots, you better have double-digit assists. And he did. He had 13 assists. So, bully for you, buddy. But, dude. You can't shoot for shit. And Doc Rivers is talking about how we're putting the right work in and we want him to work the right way. He's probably not going to play for Australia in the Olympics. Like that.
They don't want him.
Right. They're like, we're in contention for a medal. We kind of don't want you. So we're good. Like, you go stay in Philly. But we got this. But you can't say that Joel Embiid's a soft player anymore. Like, you can't say, I mean, he showed up. He did what he could do. Tobias Harris showed up. I mean, Ben Simmons is just, he's not who, they're not who we thought they were. Like, Dennis Green, again. But.
But who did anybody ever think?
At what point is he considered overrated?
But what did anybody expect from him, though? Like, I've never, even in college, I never saw this, like, amazing player that was, like, so great that he had to go number one. Like, you think about Andrew Wiggins. You think about Devin Booker didn't even go number one. Like, how does this guy still have a job?
don't know.
And he's playing in Philly. And that's like the, one of the toughest markets to play in from your fans. You had 5 points in 40 plus minutes. Tobias Harris had more points than you, man.
Well, Tobias Harris is a better player than him. So he should. But I think we can definitely say without a degree of doubt, the process has failed. Right? You had Markelle Fultz got freaked out so much they had to deal him to Orlando. He's finally rebuilding his career somewhat.
Imagine if they took Tatum in that draft with the number one pick.
Oh, God. Like, they'd actually be contenders. They'd actually
Oh, my God. They probably have a championship. They would probably have a championship right now.
Exactly.
At least one.
Yeah. So I think we can all agree that process, it just did not work.
I disagree with you. I don't think the process did not work because they did get Joel Embiid. They had some talented players come through that didn't stay. But, I mean,
like
last 3 years, they're competing for a championship. Yeah, I know they just got knocked out. They got knocked out in the game 7, and Ben Simmons forgot how to play basketball. I mean, that's what happened there, okay? But I think maybe he's playing the wrong position. Maybe he's shooting with the wrong hand. I don't know. But I don't know. And most of his shots come from within the paint too. He doesn't even take 3-point shots. How do you not even take 3-point shots as a point guard? Because they're not even D'ing you, bro.
It's in his head. It's psychological. At some point, he realizes it. We all do. If you're ever in that moment, and sometimes it gets too much for you. And it definitely looked like it was too big of a moment for Ben Simmons, but he is a veteran, which is even more bizarre. It's not
the
like
other,
Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
Markelle Fultz just shit the bed from day one.
The other thing that hurt, I think, the 76ers, what they didn't have Danny Green, I think that really hurt. I mean, he's a real sharp shooter. He's really deadly from three. Coddington was coming in and helping them out, but like you said, Joel Embiid was all world. But just to go back to the Nets, I mean, to say they showed up, I mean, Harden was hurt. You could tell he was hurt. He couldn't drive to the basket. He was short on all of his shots. And then Kyrie was out. And I'm not saying that's an excuse, but to say that they showed up, I don't really think they showed up. And for Kevin Durant, yeah, great. That's great, Kevin Durant. You had all these points and you played really well, but you still lost. Like, to me, he's not going to get the respect of the old-timers if he's not able to win a championship, not on his own, but just be the guy. Like, he went to Golden State and won a championship with a team that already won a championship. And he was one of the guys on that team, not the guy on the team, right? Now you go to Brooklyn, and you bring it, and Kyrie's there, and now Harden comes there. I mean, most of us can argue that Harden was the MVP this year, not Kevin Durant. So I don't think they could win with the role players they currently have. Like I said, Joe Harris couldn't catch a pass and couldn't make a shot. Like, they need quality role players to come in and play for that team, because in a 7-game series, this is what's going to happen. You come to that last game, people are hurt, people are having a bad night, anything can happen.
Well, here's my question to you then. What would you consider that the James Harden trade was unnecessary? Because Caris LeVert would have been there, you know. Spencer Dinwiddie, he didn't get hurt. He opted out of his contract. He's now a free agent. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there. And they had to give up several of their pieces, several good depth pieces, in order to get that third star. So ultimately, it's kind of like, we'll play a quick game of would you rather. Would you rather have the guys you traded for James Harden or James Harden in that scenario?
I don't really know if the result changes. That's the thing, is I don't really know if it changes. Like, they're basically the Oklahoma City Thunder, and instead of having Russell Westbrook, they have Kyrie Irving.
Right.
And I actually think the role players that were on OKC were probably better. They had Steven Adams on that team. They did think they had Serge Ibaka on that team.
They did. That Ibaka was on.
They
it.
Had
they
had Nick
Jackson.
they had Nick Collison on that team, I'm pretty sure. I think they had Kendrick Perkins at one point, possibly.
Yeah.
But so that's where you are. Now, the other thing is these guys are pretty locked in. I don't think they're I don't think they're gonna opt out or leave. I mean, they might be worth exploring trading one of them. But that's something that the Nets are gonna have to figure out in the off season.
If you've ever listened to a podcast and thought to yourself, hey, I can do this, then do I have the tools for you? If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. No specialty training, no specialty programs needed. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. How cool is that? It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Go to anchor.fm and get started today. That's anchor.fm. What are you waiting for? Download the app.
But one thing that the Celtics figured out really early was is Kemba Walker needs to go. And I kind of called that as soon as Brad Stevens became the GM. I said, first thing that needs to happen is Kemba Walker's salary has got to get out of here because this guy can't play on this team. And Sam Presti looked at it and said, yo, I'll take him. So did Sam Presti fleece Brad Stevens in this deal?
To go over the particulars of the deal, Boston sent Kemba and the 16th overall pick. Plus a 2025 second rounder to Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City now has, I think, 18 draft picks in the next upcoming drafts, which is insane draft capital. Sam Presti is doing, he's doing some major work. And in exchange for Kemba Walker, a first round pick and a second, you got Al Horford, you got Moses Brown, and a 2023 second round pick. There's no way you can tell me that Sam Presti didn't just work Brad Stevens. You got a salary dump and you gave up a first round pick. And a first round pick. One or the other, not both. But you're bringing back Al Horford. Maybe that'll make a difference. He's been there before. He's a veteran presence. He's familiar with the Boston market and can probably add some.
Talking about the chicken place, or are you talking about the area?
I mean, he may well be familiar, well versed with Boston market. I mean, not as much as Perk is, if you've seen him lately. But you know, he'll provide some veteran presence to a team that, you know, could desperately need some up front because right now it's who? Taco Fall and Williams and, you know, they're young. They do have they're young, so they could definitely use a veteran presence up front, but not for the price that Brad Stevens just paid.
Yeah, I kind of disagree. I don't think he got fleeced. I mean, the goal for him was to dump this salary. He had to dump it. He had to get rid of it. I'm not sure there's really a market for Kemba Walker, especially after what happened the last couple of years. It's kind of embarrassing. I mean, he's a Bronx guy, Christ the King, UConn, and like all he had to do was step in and be Kyrie Irving, kid from Jersey who went to Duke, and he couldn't do that. Brad Stevens knows who Kemba is, and he's just not a big market point guard in the NBA. Like, that's not who Kemba is. Kemba is, I can play for Charlotte. I can play for the Sacramento Kings. I can play for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, that's who Kemba Walker is. I believe he had this I like I said, I had this a couple of weeks ago. It's a small, he's a small market guy, and I think everybody got what they wanted out of the deal.
Where you lose me is the pick. You lose me at the first round pick. I mean, I just, oh, I in a market where you
You
need
can make that
running
up though.
players.
You can make that up. You can make that up down the line. You can get the first round pick in other ways. I don't think you're really losing out much on that because, like I said, the Thunder got to take on this salary. This hand straps them too, unless they're able to restructure his deal. So you,
He's
that's
not going
that's
to be
the,
there for long, man. I
but
already.
that's the but that's the whole thing. Like, that's the thing you're failing to. I think you're failing to pick up on. It's just like no small team, right, could take him because of his salary. So if I'm taking him and his salary, you got to give me assets. You got to give me something because I can't really build a team with him on it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
And
I get what you're saying.
the big market teams, the big market teams don't want him. Like the Knicks don't want him. The Hawks don't need him. Dallas don't need him. Like the big teams don't need him. Like I think after what happened, the Lakers aren't probably interested in him anymore anyway. So that's what I'm trying to say is like you've got to figure out a way, like how can I get a team to take him? I don't know. Was there a conversation with the Pacers? Because that would have been another good spot for him to go. Minnesota, that'd have been perfect for this dude.
Well, Minnesota. I mean, well, I don't know. He might very well just
give me D'Angelo Russell and I'll give you Kemba and we'll call it a day. But then again, I don't know what D'Angelo Russell's salary is. Like, you got to dump the salary. You're not going to be able to. He's not worth what he's getting paid. Like, his agent worked that room and got his client the best contract possible.
no, he definitely. He definitely capitalized to the, on that scenario. So it was the perfect time for him to be a free agent. It was the perfect time for the Celtics to kind of swoop in because they were sour off the Kyrie Irving thing. And, it was the right time for both, but it ended up being a bad fit. Whereas, well, the funny thing is that Terry Rozier ended up going to Charlotte and taking Kemba Walker's place, and Terry Rozier ultimately got he got replaced by LaMelo Ball. So, it's one of those things that it's definitely, you try to get as much money as you can. That's just the nature of sports these days, especially, in contracts. You're looking to get the most security and just kind of get as much AAV as you can. But I don't think he'll be long on that team, just because of the simple fact that Sam Presti has this wizardry about him, where he moves players, even some players that you don't necessarily think are desirable, and he'll get stuff for them. Like, he'll get players you've never heard of, and that system just works. He'll just keep accumulating draft capital, and it all just seems to just keep chugging along in Oklahoma City. They rarely have wretched seasons. They may be under 500, but not to the point where they're never number one pick bad. But I think Sam Presti is definitely he's on the right track, and I definitely think it could end up being a fleecing, especially with the next move, because I don't think Kemba Walker finishes the season at Oklahoma City.
Can't help but smile when you see a balloon. The simplest occasion is a party. Westchester Pop Stars, located in New Rochelle, New York, offers balloon styling and decor for all life's events: birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, showers, school and corporate events, store openings, or just because. Westchester Pop Stars takes balloons and shapes them into works of art, creating decorative installations for your special occasions. No event is too big or too small, and their custom personalization service is top-notch. Westchester Pop Stars is a private studio, quickly expanding. In-person consultation is by appointment only. Send an email to westchesterpopstars@gmail.com for more information or to schedule an appointment. No need to hire an event stylist. All you need is balloons. Currently servicing Westchester, Putnam, New New York City, and Connecticut. To find Westchester Pop Stars, search for them on Instagram, Facebook, or Google.
We had an interesting little social media display the other day. In honor of Pride Month, Carl Nassib, defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders, came out an NFL first via Instagram video. And not only did he publicly announce that he is gay, he also made a $100,000 donation to the Trevor Project, which is a great organization. They help, they're a nonprofit organization that focuses on suicide prevention for LGBTQIA plus that population. Is this a big deal, a little deal, or no deal?
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to say. I'm not really sure. I don't want to sound insensitive on this, but I don't need to really know the sexuality of my players. I just, you know, I want to watch them play football. I want to watch them play basketball. I want to see them do business on the field. I'm happy for the guy. I'm sure this is an incredibly brave thing for him to do. And I'm sure it's been sitting on his shoulders and he's wanted to let it out for quite some time. So I'm just not sure if it's a big deal, a little deal, or no deal.
I'm going to say that it's a thing where it can be all three. You know, it's a big deal for him on a personal level. It also is a big deal from the standpoint of breaking stigma. You know, football is generally considered a macho sport, a manly sport. And, you know, to be considered other than macho is a sign of weakness. And for him, for Carl Nassib to come out and say, this is who I am. And, you know, if you are, and if you ever feel comfortable, you can too. You can do this too and not worry about being stigmatized as effeminate or, you know, less than yourself. You know, I think that's a big deal for not just him, but for the future of the NFL and its inclusivity. It depends on the market. I mean, Las Vegas, I don't know if it's going to make a big deal, big splash in Las Vegas. Like I said, New York, it's not really, I mean, it's not a big deal in terms of the population. I mean, I'm sure that we have encountered many gay people. I know I have. And it's, you know, it's what it is. It doesn't really matter, you know? Like, who you are as a person matters more. I just don't be a dick. Like, that's my motto. Just don't be a dick and we're cool. And I could also see it being kind of a big deal in more conservative markets, too, to where there'll be backlash for whatever reason. So whether it's, you know, on religious grounds or cultural grounds or anything like that. I mean, anything is possible. It is Pandora's box. That's the problem with being the first. Even though Michael Sam was truly the first, I think sometimes that sometimes we forget that it's happened before. And I think Michael Sam needs a little credit for what he did. And as far as Carl Nassib goes, good for you. And I hope that, you know, you can live your life unburdened.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I feel like Michael Sam really broke the barrier. Like, the first one through the fence always gets the barrage, and the next one walks through okay. So, the NFL is trying to toot this as the first actively, but I remember Michael Sam. And, I just want Carl to be judged by his ability to play the game, and not who he's dating off the field and what he's doing off the field. I just think that's a little ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to him. And if anyone else wants to do it, I hope they're empowered by Carl. It's just not something, and maybe it's just because, you know, like, we're from New York and we see this stuff all the time. It's not really important to me. I don't need to know about it. I need to hear about it, but you're good for him and I'm happy for him.
Absolutely. And it's This is, it's not an easy topic to transition into something else, but we're definitely going to give it a shot. Both the Islanders and the Golden Knights are on the brink of elimination. The Islanders are actually on right now as we speak. So, based on what you've seen in the series, who survives?
You know, I think the better question is what the fuck happened? Like, what happened? What happened to the Islanders and the Golden Knights? Like, what, last week we were talking about, oh, man, Islanders look so great. They went down to Tampa. They beat them. It's looking great for them. We're talking about Fleury and how he's stopping everything. And Montreal's got no chance for the Golden Knights. Now we're talking about, man, who's on the brink of elimination? Who's not going to go to the next round? I mean, I penciled both of these teams in for the Stanley Cup Finals. Then the Islanders get their dicks kicked in by the Tampa Bay Lightning, 8-0 down in Tampa recently. So now they got to win a game at home, and then they got to go back down to Tampa to win Game 7. Yikes. The Canadians hung 3 on Fleury in Vegas. But now Vegas is in a good position because they got to go to Montreal, and if they could win that game, then they get their Game 7 back in their building. Having said all that, even though the Islanders are currently down 1-0, I am actually still going to stick with the Islanders just because I think they're the better team. I think their chances are better than the Golden Knights at this point.
I would agree from the simple standpoint that they play better defense than the Golden Knights. Varlamov has stabilized the goaltending position now that Sorokin is on the bench. The Golden Knights, they're in a little bit of a pickle because, yeah, Fleury, you know, up until now has been great, but he definitely did not post the last game. And Robin Lehner actually came in, had to start a game, and he was phenomenal after not playing since May. So they have a little bit to work on in terms of who's going to be in goal, and their stars need to come out. Pacioretty, Stone, Petrangelo, Martinez, Tuck. They need to show up the way that Stamkos, Killorn, Yanni Gord, and the other players on the Lightning, the higher level players on the Lightning.
Kucherov
showed up. I mean, he had a couple of assists, but he didn't put one in the net. So, yeah, 8-0 happened last year too. Game one, they lost. The Islanders lost 8-0. They lost this one 8-0. So, when Tampa Bay gets hot and Steven Stamkos remembers he's on the ice, you can put 8. They can easily put 8 on anybody. So I'm not surprised about that, but I still don't think that as well as Montreal playing, they are not as good. They're not as talented. Carey Price cannot do everything for them. Whereas in the Lightning series, like that is way. I mean that game felt like an aberration. The Islander that 8-0 game felt off. It felt like, okay, we're just going to move on from it, burn it, on to the next one. And we are still in this. But the Golden Knights, DeBoer needs to get on his best players' cases and figure out, like, is Fleury the guy or is Leonard the guy? Because if you have two goalies, you have no goalie. Figure it out. Figure it the fuck out. You're running out of time.
Are you in need of air care maintenance or service? I have the company for you. Air Care Technicians. They service the Westchester and Northern Bronx area and can help you with all your heating and cooling maintenance and service needs. Just give them a call at 914-315-1547. Again, that's 914-315-1547. Or shoot them an email at aircaretechnicians@gmail.com. These guys are the real deal as they are veteran-owned, licensed, and insured. Make sure to tell them that D&Z sent you.
It's time for the mail route on the Fade Route. If you want to join us, email faderoutemail@gmail.com. Questions, comments, picks, you name it, faderoutemail@gmail.com. All right, boys and girls, we have an overflowing mailbox for you today. There we go.
Is that dial-up?
It is. The things you need to do sometimes in order to make a show happen. Email number one from Randolph in Brooklyn, friend of the show, member of the in crowd. What's up, bros? What do you make of Stephen A's dumbass comments about Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker? And which one is more asinine?
I love that you're back in the Bronx and we can hear sirens. That's amazing. Just so everyone knows, you know, he came out with comments about Devin Booker saying he's the next Kobe Bryant. And then the other thing he said was Donovan Mitchell is the best player in Utah Jazz history. Okay. So for Devin Booker, no part of Devin Booker's game is remotely similar to Kobe Bryant. The Suns are in the playoffs because of Chris Paul, not because of Devin Booker. Devin Booker does not have the Mamba mentality, all right? So stop. For Donovan Mitchell, the best player in Utah Jazz history, why? Because he scores a lot of points? Hello, Karl Malone is like second all time in points. John Stockton is number one all time in assists. They're part of the dream team. Guess what, Stephen A? If there was a dream team today, Donovan Mitchell would not be a part of it. So Mitchell is never gonna crack the top 10 in assists, and he's never gonna get in the top 5 in points. So the comments are asinine. You're looking for attention, and unfortunately, I think we just gave it to him.
Well, you know, anytime they're talking about you, it's good. But I think they really need to change the name of that show from First Take to Worst Take. I mean, it's just both of them are stupid. I'm just going to throw that up. Both of them are stupid. Flat out stupid. And I don't care. You know? You can just... Oh, God.
Stephen A. You just lose your credibility. You lose your credibility.
No. Like, you say things to get attention. And why? Like, it's just... It points more to you not knowing what the fuck you're talking. Donovan Mitchell, the thing about that is that he could be, eventually, maybe, once his career is done, he may very well be up there with Karl Malone, with John Stockton, shit, with Darren Williams. He's not even on that level yet. He's still got to play it out, but you definitively say, right now, all time, just no. Not even close. And, you know, like, Kobe Bryant, can we not try and find the next Kobe Bryant and just appreciate Devin Booker for who he is and just let him be the first Devin Booker? Kobe Bryant, there aren't many that can fill that mold. You know, there aren't many LeBron Jameses. There aren't many Michael Jordan's. In fact, there's only one of each. And to just try and equivocate the two of them based on some criteria, I don't even know. It just shows that you have no idea what you're talking about. Email number two from Steve in Hunts Point. Guys, the Mets lost 4 pitchers in 2 days. Are they coming back to earth? I'll take this one if you don't mind. Yeah, they're definitely coming back to earth, but that's not because of the pitching. Yes, you lost Lucchese. Yes, you lost Gesellman. Yes, you lost Familia. Yes, you lost Stroman due to a hip injury. Stroman's the only one who's not going to be on the IL. Lucchese's out for the season, but I mean, he was getting bombed anyway. Gesellman was finally having a good year. He's out for 2 months. Who knows what he's going to be when he gets back. Familia, honestly, Familia had a nice rebound year. I could have seen him being an all-star, but you know he's got a little bit of an issue. Hopefully, it doesn't impact him for too long. I'm more concerned about the offense. They've been shut out 4 times in the last 10 games. Granted, they're putting a whooping on the Braves as of right now, but 4 times in 10 games they've been shut out. Most recently, they've been shut out 17 consecutive innings. I get it. You know, oh, Conforto was out. McNeil is out. Those guys are coming back now. Now we got to see what this team really is. And this wouldn't be the first time in Mets history that they've gotten guys back and actually taken a slide. So they couldn't have, they're not going to be as good as they were. They're not going to be the drizzling shits. They're somewhere in the middle. And this period of time with all the double headers brought on by weather delays and weather rainouts, snowouts, COVID, the weekend series with the Nationals, this is going to bring the Mets back to the pack a little bit. And the question is, how do they survive from here? SNY put a nice and interesting question out there. If you're the Mets, do you explore trading for Jose Barrios from Minnesota? And I gotta say, if the price is right, bring him in.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't think injuries will bring them down to earth. I think it's, I think, competition is going to bring them down to earth. They're not seeing really enough of it, and they won't really see it until October. The Braves aren't playing well. The Phillies are more concerned with substances on pitchers' hands. So I see competition bringing them down to earth, and they may not hit that until August, September, October.
Speaking of the Phillies and the substance checking, you see the Rizzo comments afterwards that Joe Girardi is a con artist for trying to get Max Scherzer checked for a third time?
I didn't see his comments, but I mean, I kind of agree. It's like, listen, dude, if you didn't find it the first 2 times, like, let it go. Part of this thing is gamesmanship. I think there's rules in the in I think there is actually rules to this where you can't go after it like this, and you're hurting the game by doing it. He's dealing, and the other thing is now that these pitchers can't use the spider tack and can't use all this other stuff, if they're grabbing their hair and they're scuffing the ball with their hands, like, leave them alone. Like, they're trying to figure out how can I grip the baseball because I can't use the stuff I used to use. So this Girardi thing, I feel like every week we're talking about Joe Girardi. Just, dude, let the guy pitch, let him deal. Like I said, if they found something the first, there's got to be something in play where you can't just keep asking for this. If he didn't have it the first 2 times, he's not going to have it the third time.
That's true. So there's got to be something put in play. There's got to be some kind of consequence for shit like this. Whether that, I mean, putting it into effect in such short notice is definitely falls on Rob Manfred. Shocker. Rob Manfred has done something half-assed again. But, you know, there needs to be some consequence that if you try and, you know, circumvent the rule in order to, you know, gain a competitive advantage. Trying to like slow the game down, get the pitcher's head a little bit, you know, take away a mound visit. Like, I don't know, something, you know, there's gotta be something that you can do. There's gotta be some sort of consequence that you can levy in real time to kind of deter from these things happening on a regular basis. But if you really want to get some, you know, if you really want to get some sticky stuff on, just run your hands through Bryce Harper's hair. Max Scherzer's right, man. Like, your hand might stick to his head. Never mind the ball. Email number 3 from X on the 2 line. Hypothetical situation. Okay. Weird way to start email. No hello. No what's up? Nothing. Okay. Hypothetical situation. Yankees have a runner on third and one out. Who do you trust to get a big hit?
That's funny. Gio Urshela. I mean, if I'm in the moment, yeah, I'm really thinking along the lines of DJ LeMahieu and Gio Urshela, but I think Giancarlo Stanton and Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge actually have a decent batting average with runners in scoring position, somewhere in like 260s and the 280s. But if I'm on the spot right now, I'd say Gio Urshela, DJ LeMahieu. But not many people. Not for that payroll. There's only one or two guys that I could really count on.
Well, it certainly isn't Brett Gardner. We know that.
That guy.
How he is still his job.
And can't run the bases and he can't see.
No. And yet Mike Tauchman's in San Francisco. Way to go, guys. Way to go, Cash. As far as performance this year goes, I actually wouldn't touch DJ LeMahieu right now. His swing's a little too big, and he's been striking out a lot lately. So I don't know if he is just trying to, create launch angle. I don't know if he's getting out over his skis a little bit. But right now, he's just not where he usually is. He's not as locked in as normal. I would go with Giancarlo Stanton, believe it or not.
Yeah.
He has that inside-out swing going. He's not swinging for the fences, and he's trying to produce more contact, and it's been working for him so far. But there aren't many guys in this lineup that you would say, with any degree of certainty, that I can get this done. They're going to produce contact. I mean, sacrifice flies, maybe, but not solid contact to get a hit. Even infield up, but I just don't see it. I mean, Stanton is the only one right now who's getting the job done. And a bonus email, guys. We have a fourth email for you from Ralph on Arthur Avenue. What's up, guys? Does John Tavares regret leaving the Islanders?
I'd say no. I mean, he's playing for his favorite team that he had as a kid, right? I mean, he might still have those bed sheets. I don't think it gets better than that, right? You're playing for your childhood team. I also think it's a wash. I think even if the Islanders had him, they wouldn't be any better than they are without him. So I think everyone's kind of good with the situation.
I'll give you 77 million reasons why he's okay. You want that in quarters, pennies, or dollar bills? There's no way in hell the Islanders were going to pay him that. And you're just going to have to deal with it, man. If you're on the Toronto Maple Leafs next year, or if you're someplace else, that money's guaranteed. But John Tavares got paid. So I don't think he loses a minute of sleep knowing that the Islanders are in the playoffs while he's playing golf. At the end of the day, that's sports. Like, your loyalty can be bought. Like the Million Dollar Man once said, everybody's got a price.
Everybody's got a price.
Everybody's gonna pet.
I'm getting hungry over here. Should have cooked up some dinner. And if you're looking for a new cooking show to binge, check out As You Eat It on YouTube, hosted by me, Chef Z. I invite you into my home and show you what and how I cook when I'm off the clock as a chef instructor. You're going to learn fun recipes and creative methods to empower and inspire you in the kitchen and take it to the next level. Cook how you want to cook, eat how you want to eat, eat as you eat it. That's As You Eat It, available only on YouTube. AZ, You Eat It. Check it out and let's get cooking. Order up!
right, boys and girls, you know how it goes. From 5 to 1, this week we are ordering up.
Order up.
The best NFL defensive duos from 5 to 1. Who you got, D?
All right, I got some Pittsburgh Steeler action. I got Cameron Hayward, TJ Watt. I mean, they're pretty formidable. Number 4, I mean, probably could have went lower on this, but I'm going with them at 4 as Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. They haven't really gotten to play together for like a whole season, like healthy. And, you know, looking at this Denver Broncos roster, they're pretty good. I mean, I think they can make some noise. Number 3 for me is another Watt. It's J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones. It remains to be seen how well this Cardinals team is going to play with all these stars on it. But, I mean, he didn't really tag well with Jadeveon Clowney when he was in Houston. But Chandler Jones is a different animal. He is a really good defensive player. He's probably one of the best defensive ends in football. So I'm really curious to see how that pans out. Number 2, this almost was my number 1, is Chase Young and Montez Sweat. That Redskins defense. That Redskins defense is ferocious. Not formidable, but ferocious. Like, they shut people down. They're athletic, and they got one of the best defensive coaches in the game coaching them in what's his name over there in Washington?
Rivera?
Rivera. Riverboat Ron. And then number 1 for me, maybe surprising to you, is Xavier Howard and Byron Jones. I really think that as two corners, they're as close to shutdown as Revis and Cromartie were. And wow, they're really going to help out that Dolphins defense.
Great choices, some outside the box options. For me, I'm not necessarily going for same position group. I'm looking for defensive next, duos.
Different levels, different levels. Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the same team. They're on the same defense. They're complementing each other in different ways. Like, there's some different ways you can look at this and what makes a defensive duo. For me, number 5, I'm going Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. Underrated group. And
yeah, that's excellent.
They're averaging 7.5 sacks, each one of them, when they play together. So that is pretty formidable. Number 4, Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward in Cleveland. You have Myles Garrett getting to the quarterback. Denzel Ward, when he's on the field, he is exceptional as a cornerback. And I think once you add in John Johnson on there and Greedy Williams, that secondary is going to be very, very formidable. Number 3, Chandler Jones and Buda Baker. Again, another second-level combination. Chandler Jones, exceptional at getting to the quarterback. And then Buda Baker is one of the best in the secondary in all of the NFL. Number 2, the elite of that first level, third level, Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. Like, Aaron Donald, it's a beast. Like, you cannot dispute his talent. Jalen Ramsey, is he a loudmouth? You bet your ass he's a loudmouth. But he's one of the best shutdown corners, if not the best shutdown corner in all of the NFL. And that's another order up for another day, best shutdown corner. We can definitely, you know, do that one. And it might be easier than trying to pick a best defensive duo. And number 1, you're reigning, defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers present Shaq Barrett and JPP. I'm sure Patrick Mahomes can agree on their level of ability and performance. But that's our 5 to 1. What's your 5 to 1? Hit us up at Fade Route Podcast on IG, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or DM us on Twitter at FaderouteDNZ and let us know.
Well, this has been the Fade Route with D&Z. Thanks for tuning in tonight. You can catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Anchor, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, stay faded, everyone.
Talk to you next week.
you want to get in on the action? We want to hear from you. Email us at faderoutemail@gmail.com with your questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it. We want to hear from you. We're on Instagram too. Slide in our DMs at Fade Route Podcast. Get at us.